Hi, I'm Luke, your host for the Republican Professor podcast. We're glad that you're here, and I'm glad I'm here too. We are doing part three and of this 10-day waiting period issue in California for firearms transfers. And I'm really excited that you're possibly joining us to dig in to the issue of what happens in California in the case of bureaucrats and politicians, though well-meaning, sometimes craft legislation and rules that impact the citizens who live here. And so we're talking about how some of those things, namely the 10-day waiting period specifically, impacts Californians and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Our special guest today is the same one that we've had for the last two episodes, and that's Senior Judge Anthony Ishii. Now, he's pretty old, and basically the we're going to go by what he wrote because he said it. He said, "This is what I said." And yeah, I got nothing more to say. I mean, I've already said it on paper. And so we're going to pay close attention to what his work was on this. That's the whole point is we got to listen to people who know what they're talking about. And sometimes they go into pretty great detail, and the detail can feel at the time overwhelming. And so you know you're tempted to shut down, but I actually think that once you get into some of this stuff, it's very interesting, and you learn a lot. The interesting thing about Anthony Ishii is a Democrat judge. He was appointed by President Bill Clinton, confirmed by the United States Senate, to the federal bench, the United States District Court for Central California. And he gets the right answer on this. Now, I mean, the right answer, I think, is like the Republican answer, but it's nice when there's a meeting of the minds between two sides on the Constitution. And I wish that that happened more often, but it seems like we go through cycles where maybe that's not the right word, but we go through periods of time where there seems to be a drift and a polarization on fundamental constitutional rights. The question is once that begins to happen or is already happening, is there anything we can do about it to heal that rift that occurs? Because the rift does affect like actual real people in everyday life. So this case is about how it affected Californians. It'll be interesting to see how you react to it. Last time we went all the way through page 11 on Anthony Ishii's judicial writing in Sylvester versus Harris. Now don't blank out when I start saying the name of the case and where to find it, okay? Because those details are important for posterity. You see, it's a part of the record. It's an important part of the record that later generations who may not have any emotional connection with this material at all maybe want to dig into this and find out where these records are. So I was about to say, if you're listening in the future, well, that's the only time you could be listening to this. Sylvester versus Harris is found in the 40 First Federal Supplement, the third series, page 927, and it would be the District Court of California, 2014. If that was too much information for you, okay. That's what's on the shelf in the law library. If you go look, you know those bound volumes, if you look for it, you're going to find it on page 927. But you can also get it at Google Scholar. I'm a book person, so I prefer to go to the law library and read this. And this is old enough where you could. It's 2014. And I think on the law library shelves, they have, well, last time I checked, they had up to like 2017. So, they're always a little bit behind on the actual books. So it's a really important thing for Google Scholar to make this available. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'd like to thank Google for making this available. Okay, I said it, I got it out of my system, but they do deserve some credit for this because these data would not be available otherwise unless you had access to a law library. And then even then, the law library has to be all over it and have the latest bound volumes. And it's I once did a comparison of Pepperdine University's law library with Chapman's in Orange County, and I'm in Orange County, so I would prefer to use Chapman Law Library if at all possible. And I know one of the law librarians there, and she's very helpful. She's been very extremely helpful to me through the years. But Pepperdine's Law Library, although Pepperdine University is a more beautiful campus and a more stunning place and a great, in some respects, it was a good place to work in some respects, not so in other respects, but I worked there for over 10 years. But Pepperdine University's Law Library was not, they didn't have as many bound volumes as Chapman did. And I'm sad to report that to you. But when I did the comparison years ago, Pepperdine was behind. So, but that, why am I telling you this? You're not in Southern California. What do you care? Okay, we're on page 11 of the Google Scholar edition, waiting period laws. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to treat this like an interview with Senior Judge Anthony Ishii, because you got to understand he's really old. There's all sorts of political reasons why he would not want to come on this podcast, okay? Because in person, because being a judge is a very sensitive matter. It should be. And typically, judges are very cagey. I mean, they're even more cagey than politicians are. And politicians drive me nuts, especially if they're running for office, because sometimes you just can't tell. It's not quite the material I want to get on the podcast. I don't want the podcast to turn into a commercial for their campaign. I mean, I can get the commercial elsewhere. That's not really a unique record. The record I'm interested in developing here is one that would be unique and helpful because it's unique. In other words, don't just do what everybody else is doing. So being a federal judge is the temptation is to say what you already said, but even that's a little bit hard because oftentimes the way it was said is the way is what was said. So it's better just to go back to what was actually just said, right? And then try to come to grips with that, how it was presented, if that makes sense. So that's the attempt here. So I'm on page 11. I'm going to read now and make comments. So it's like an interview in the sense that he's now talking. Judge Ishii is talking. It's my voice, but it's his words. It's an interview because I'm going to interject my thoughts on this. So it's a transformative reading. And I hope it will be useful going forward. I want to be faithful to what he's saying, but I also want to spruce it up a little bit. And it's like it's a Christmas tree. Smells great. It doesn't have any decorations on it yet. And you don't want to just leave it like that. You want to, make this tree sing. Defendant has identified no laws in existence at or near 1791 or 1868 that imposed a waiting period of any duration between the time of purchase and the time of possession of a firearm. Defendant. Who's the defendant? Well, this is Sylvester versus Harris. Who's Harris? Kamala Harris. She's the current vice president. Back then, she was attorney general of the state of California. So the defendant is really the attorney general of the state of California. Defendant has identified no historical materials at or near 1791 or 1868 that address government-imposed waiting periods or the perception of government-imposed waiting periods in relation to the Second Amendment. This is under waiting period laws. And this is under findings of fact. So these are facts that he's saying. Okay, so to the court's knowledge, 10 states and the District of Columbia impose a waiting period between the time of purchase and the time of delivery of a firearm. Delivery just mean it doesn't mean postal service. Excuse me. It doesn't mean UPS or anything like that. It means you go to the licensed dealer and they deliver it to you. It's like a formal thing that they call that delivery. It's once that happens, just like any other piece of property, then it's yours. It's not as simple as going to the grocery store and buying eggs. That delivery happens when you're in the checkout line and then you pay for it, get your receipt, then you take the eggs. That's delivery then. So the difference is there's a waiting period between the eggs and getting delivered to you. So you have to come back. It'd be like if you had to come back to the grocery store. And the cashier is not just a union member at Ralph's or King Soopers or Kroger. I think I covered the whole United States there, at least the lower 48. It's not. It would be as if the cashier has to be licensed by the government, like the Department of Justice, to give you your firearm. Now, it's not the licensure that's at issue here. It's not even a background check. It's the duration that you have to wait. That's the precise issue here. And it's really important to get that because people confuse the issues. And so the only question is, why is it a one size fits all 10-day wait? That's the question. Why is that the character of the legislation and the rulemaking? And that affects Californians all over the country, all over the state. How does that affect them? The way it affects them is the you might think it's not a small issue, but this judge is saying you got to be really careful because what appears to you to be a small issue is a big issue in terms of the Constitution. And it could be a big issue, even commonsensically, to average everyday people that gets ignored somehow. So he's notice that he's mentioned 1791, 1868. 1791 is when the Second Amendment was adopted. 1868 is when the 14th Amendment was adopted. Yeah. I guess I should have said yeah to the Second Amendment as well, but the 14th Amendment was drafted by Republicans, so I felt like push comes to shove. But actually, both are awesome. So you have those two periods of the drafting of the Constitution and the adoption of that language. The laws at issue in play there are the interpretive issue for how to evaluate later statutes, whether they conflict with that. And also, how widespread would waiting period laws be? Is this an outlier? And he's saying it's an outlier. Only 10 states of 50 have them. So that's 20% plus the District of Columbia. Three states and the District of Columbia have waiting period laws for purchase of all firearms. So that's a really small number. California, 10 days. District of Columbia, 10 days. Illinois, 3 days. 3 days for pistols, 1 day for long guns. Rhode Island, 7 days. Okay. Four states have waiting periods for handguns. Florida, 3 days. Hawaii, 14 days. Jeez. Washington, up to 5 days from the time of purchase for the sheriff to complete a background check. And Wisconsin, 2 days. These days are all over the place, aren't they? In terms of the length. Connecticut has a waiting period for long guns that is tied to an authorization to purchase from the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection. Minnesota and Maryland have a waiting period for the purchase of handguns and assault rifles, 7 days. So you can purchase assault rifles? I wonder how that changed. There is no federal waiting period law. The Brady Act's 5-day waiting period expired in 1998. That's interesting. That's really interesting. In 1923, the California legislature created a waiting period for handguns, whereby no handgun, pistol, or other concealable firearm could be delivered to its purchaser on the day of purchase. 1923. In 1953, the 1923 handgun waiting period law was codified into the California Penal Code. That's an interesting little detail. So now it became a criminal issue rather than an administrative issue. I think that's. Let's camp there for a second. Why is that significant? Well, let's think about what the criminal law is. What's the purpose of the criminal law? The purpose of the criminal law is to provide clear boundaries between what is acceptable and unacceptable in the most extreme way possible that a legislature can do. So, penal code is created by the legislature. A penal code sets out clear boundaries, it's supposed to. Clear boundaries between prohibited and allowed. And if you cross into the prohibited part, and that's proven, then a conviction removes a not just a social acceptance, but a legal status that you have. And that legal status would be law-abiding person. And this is supposed to have consequences for your entire life, your ability to get a job, your ability to get a loan, your freedom, in many cases, how much money you're allowed to have. Not that there's a cap per se, but that this is extremely expensive. It's meant to be debilitating to you. And let me just say that one more time. It's meant to be debilitating to you. So moving from an administrative consequence to a criminal consequence is something you want to pay very close attention to, because there is a phenomenon of over-criminalization. That is to say, ideally, the criminal law will take notice of and prohibit and punish offenses of bad, immoral things, immoral, not inconveniences, not really administrative things, but bad things like murder, robbery, burglary, assault, kidnapping. That's classic criminal behavior. Lying under oath, that would be classic criminal. Think of the Ten Commandments. If you have several of those in the Ten Commandments sound familiar. You got do not murder, do not steal, do not bear false witness. Goes a little bit further in the case of coveting. But you could say that that's a prohibition on on a conspiracy, which is classical criminal behavior, if the conspiracy is a crime. Some conspiracies are not crimes, like conspiracy to have a surprise birthday party. That's not a crime. Okay. 1953, the 1923 handgun waiting period was codified into the California Penal Code with no substantive changes. One California court has cited legislative hearing testimony from 1964, in which witnesses testified that this 1953 law was originally enacted to cool people off, but that this law was not enforced with regard to individual transfers through magazine sales or swap meets. Gotta love the good old days, swap meets. In 1955, the California legislature extended the handgun waiting period from 1 day to 3 days. No legislative history has been cited that addresses why the waiting period was ex excuse me, was extended from 1 to 3 days. In 1965, the California legislature extended the handgun waiting period from 3 days to 5 days. I have a little note in the margin says, I said, funny how that works. It's getting longer. The legislative history indicates that the legislature extended the waiting period from 3 days to 5 days in 1965 because the 3 day waiting period did not provide Cal DOJ sufficient time to conduct proper background checks on prospective concealable firearms purchasers before delivery of the firearms to the purchasers. Additionally, a report from 1975-1976 session of the Senate Judiciary Committee indicates that the purpose of the 5 day provision is to permit the law enforcement authorities to investigate the purchaser's record before he actually requires the firearm to determine whether he falls within the class of persons prohibited from possessing concealed firearms. No legislative history relating to the 1965 law has been cited that relates to a cooling off period. So 1975, the California legislature extended the handgun waiting period from 5 days to 15 days in the margin I have, good old Jerry Brown. The legislative, that was his first term right after Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan had other plans. The legislative history indicates that the California legislature extended the waiting period from 5 to 15 days in order to give law enforcement authorities sufficient time to investigate the records of purchasers of handguns prior to the delivery of handguns. A waiting period of 5 days was thought to be inadequate for the California Bureau of Firearms to thoroughly check all records of the purchasers. No legislative history relating to the 1975 law has been cited that addresses a cooling off period. Okay. You getting this so far? Purpose of the waiting period is to provide time to do a background check. There is a little bit of evidence that there was supposed to be a cooling off period. That seems earlier, and we're in the 70s. 1991, the California legislature expanded the waiting period to cover all firearms. Funny how that works. 1996, the California legislature reduced the waiting period from 15 days to 10 days. 1996. So there was a reduction. I wonder if there was a Republican governor in California at that time in 1996. I'm not really wondering. Yes, there was. Pete Wilson. Pete Wilson was governor at that time. So the tendency of making the waiting periods longer went backwards under a Republican. The California legislature reduced the waiting period from 15 days to 10 days because the California Department of Justice switched to an electronic database system, which allowed for faster processing of background checks. Good old computers. Yeah, the BOF is an agency within Cal DOJ that conducts background checks on prospective firearm purchasers. A report from the Senate Committee on Criminal Procedure and a report from the Assembly Committee on Public Safety indicate that the waiting period is used to provide time to complete a background check and to provide a cooling off period. However, no legislative history related to the 1996 law has been cited that deals with specific findings or evidence related to the cooling off period. What Judge Ishii is doing, he's saying, let's sort the reason out here. Like, is this a cooling off period thing, or is this a background check thing? Because if it's a background check thing, that's a pure process thing. Like, how fast does that go? If it's a cooling off period, that's a lot harder to judge, because it seems like any hard and fast rule on that will be arbitrary by its very nature. Does that make sense? It's arbitrary to have a hard and fast rule for cooling off, because people cool off. If there is, how do you even know there is a cooling off thing happening? You don't. You just assume the worst. That right there is kind of a problem in criminal law. You're not supposed to assume the worst of people. But in any case, how do you know what's, if, let's say you do assume the worst. Well, what's the worst? Is it 10 days? Is that the worst? How do you come up with 10 days? If the issue is cooling off, it seems like you could extend that and extend that and extend that. And it would just be a preference of a majority, a mere majority. When you're talking in the context of fundamental individual rights, people get very nervous when you're just punting to a bare majority how they feel at any given moment. Number three, the California background check. The California background check begins with the completion and submission of a dealer record of sales, DROS. The DROS is an application form that a gun dealer electronically submits to Cal DOJ, which contains information about the prospective purchaser, the firearm, and the dealership. After Cal DOJ receives a DROS application, BOF begins the background check process on the prospective purchaser. The DROS application is sent to Cal DOJ's Consolidated Firearms Information System, which is a computerized system. The CFIS coordinates the electronic portion of the background check process, called the Basic Firearms Eligibility Check, by sending inquiries to other electronic databases and compiling the responses. The first database queried as a part of the BFEC, and government people, they love their acronyms, is California Department of Motor Vehicles, DMV. I think we can handle that one. The identification information on the DROS application is verified with DMV for several reasons. To ensure that the background check is run on the correct person, to prevent the occurrence of straw purchases, and to prevent people from using fake identification to purchase beer. Oh, I mean, firearms. I like when people ask me for my California driver's license to provide it and say, this is what I use to buy beer. And sometimes gets a chuckle, sometimes doesn't. All right, what do we got here? Where was I? Cal DOJ sends the DROS applicant's driver's license or the California identification number to the DMV database. The DMV database then returns the person's name, date of birth, and license status to the DOJ. Now, it proceeds like that for a few pages. I almost said several pages, but let me say here, one, two, three, four, five. I guess that's several. Okay, 5.5 pages. And it's a It's a grueling read to read about the process for a background check. There's a quite a lot to it, and there's a lot of acronyms. I did read this more than once. I actually read through this. This is not exactly how it occurs right now. The system has changed a little bit, but it's, you get the impression, you get the idea that there's no database that you, it's not like a Google search and criminal and then it pops up. So there's a prop, this takes some time to do, possibly, I guess is the point. I think what California Kamala Harris was trying to do at the time is she's trying to say, look how complicated our work is. And oh my gosh, we barely have enough time to do it in 10 days. What would we do without the 10 days? And Anthony Ishii, who is the same political party as Kamala Harris, the defendant, he goes through 5.5 pages of this very detailed process. And he just takes careful note of all the stuff that has to be done. So, like what, for example? Let me just, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I will just read some highlights and then we'll move on to the next section. Okay. So here's some highlights in California history. The Dros records from January 1st, 2014 forward are kept for long guns. In other words, every dealer done firearm transfer, which is all retail purchases of brand new firearms, those records are kept for all firearms after 2014. Prior to that, it was handguns. And so now there's a registration system in effect for all records from 2014. Okay. And then the Dros records for handguns were only kept from 1996 on. How long has California been in existence since 1848? Is it 1849? 1848? Yeah. So this is very recent. Okay. You might say, well, it's computers. But remember, they were doing background checks before computers. And there was a waiting period tied to a background check before computers. So it has, and actually the background check before computers was much shorter than the background check with computers. Keep that detail in mind. That's an important detail. Why? Because what the judge is trying to do is sift through this avalanche of material and testimony and try to determine in as fair a way as possible, this defendant, are they covering up something? Meaning, are the, let me be more specific, not just covering up something. Is there an arbitrariness to the waiting period that they're covering up with an avalanche of material? And one of the just the really basic and obvious signs is that computers have made things instantaneous, not harder, but easier. And with computers, when there's a Democrat in office, the waiting period is extended. Extended, not reduced. I mean, it's not that it's not always that obvious, but then with computers, the waiting period under Republican is reduced, but it's kept the same even with the advance in technology. It's kept at 10 days. In fact, it's actually expanded to cover more firearms. So there's been an expansion, except for one time under Pete Wilson when it went from 15 days to 10 days. There has never been a reduction of the time, even with advanced technologies. And before there were computers, the waiting period was much smaller for most of the waiting period history. So does that indicate that there's an arbitrariness to this? Well, maybe more things have become criminalized. Maybe the criminal code has blossomed and ballooned, and maybe there's more opportunity to become a criminal, more opportunity than you ever thought. Someone once said you commit probably a felony a day. I mean, it's amazing, because so many things now are crimes that weren't before. I don't know how much there is to that in this, because I think that that tendency of bureaucratization and criminalization has been going on for several decades. But if there's more opportunity to become a criminal or to become indicted, like my former mentor, Michael Uhlman, used to introduce himself as currently unindicted. So that's a detail. So here's another detail on page 14. The AFS database is not an absolute database, but is a type of leads database. Okay, so there's a lead system, and sometimes you have to have an analyst follow up a lead. So a person has to finagle different systems. Under federal law, any warrant prohibits the wanted person from owning or possessing a firearm. Under state law, persons wanted for a felony offense are prohibited or owning for a firearm. So it's not just a you pass into the criminal category by conviction, which there's two ways that happens. You either confess and get a plea of conviction, or you're convicted in another way in court, right? You can't be convicted of a crime just by the police saying you are convicted now. Magic. That's not how it works. But now with firearms, which is a fundamental constitutional right, individual right, firearms is weird. And this is another topic, but about whether this is really permissible. But firearms, even just being wanted, puts you across the line. Or so in other words, the goal for being to enjoy your rights moves depending on whether someone finds you to be wanted or whether you have a warrant out. That's a separate issue. We're going to just take note of that, maybe come back to it later. Page 16. ICE, there's an ICE database, helps identify people who are in the United States unlawfully. The amount of time it takes an analyst to process a query DROS application depends on the size of the records involved and the number of databases for which there have been hits. Sometimes it takes longer. Okay. These are what he thought were relevant to the 10 days. I'm on 17. Not all DROS applications go through the processing queue for an analyst to review. If a DROS application has been checked by all of the databases and there are no hits or matches found in any of the databases, and there's several databases and they all have acronyms, then that DROS application, Dealer Record of Sale, DROS, DROS, that DROS application is considered auto-approved and is not put into any queue for the CIS analyst to review. That is a key finding of fact, page 17. Okay. The process does not check if a DROS applicant has a COE, Certificate of Eligibility, which is a one-year background check, a CCW license, concealed carry weapon, or a firearm in the system. However, it is possible for BCEF, one of those parts of the system, to include an automated search to determine whether a DROS applicant has a COE, a CCW, or a firearm. This probably sounds crazy, but I mean these details, but the people suing Kamala Harris are in that class of people that have COE, CCW license, or a firearm. And they, in other words, these people should be auto-approved right away and not have to wait the 10 days. So what about that? And so that's what Ishii is saying here. Now, let me give you the last two findings of fact here under this. A DROS applicant application may be delayed for up to 30 days in order for BOF to further investigate whether the applicant is prohibited for up to 30 days. For dispositions that result in a finding of undetermined after 30 days, the BOF cannot determine whether a person is prohibited from possessing a firearm. The dealer has discretion to either refuse or permit the transfer of the firearm. Once BOF approves a DROS application, the DROS applicant has 30 days in which to take possession of the firearm. I put a question mark on that because I think it's like actually 20 days. I think it's 30 days total. That's at least how it is now, and that's how it's been for many years since 2016. So I think that might be a mistake. Accordingly, BOF considers a completed and approved background check to be good for 30 days. Okay, maybe I misread this, but he says the applicant has 30 days in which to take possession of firearm. That's the 10 day takes up 10 days, so you actually have 20 days in the normal case. Yeah, well, no, you would have 20 days because it's, yeah, okay. All right. But now in 2020, the DROS applications were being delayed p way past 10 days. It was a nightmare. Now, finding fact number four, I'm going to proceed through this a little bit more quickly here. There's a history of how many applications there were and how many denials there were. Exactly. Okay. These are exact numbers. These are not round numbers. These are exact numbers. So, for example, in 2011, Cal DOJ processed 601,243 DROS applications and had 5,805 denials. So, you got 600,000 applications to buy a firearm through the DROS system. And then there's just a little under 6,000, which is 1%. So it's just under 1% that are denied. Let me do a quick scan here. It looks like they're about less than 1% are denied. You got 2010, 11, 12, 13. There's always a backlog of DROS applications. Current backlog stands at about 20,000. Jeez. There's 24 agents. They typically work well in excess of 40 hours a week. They are required to work mandatory overtime hours between 30 and 40 in order to address the backlog. I have a question mark there. They work 80 hours a week all the time. Seems odd. You see how this works. So the legislature won't approve funding for that because they want it to take a long time. But it seems like they're being abusive to their employees. Approximately 80% of all DROS applications are not auto-approved and require the review of an analyst. So most are not auto-approved. Approximately 20% are auto-approved and they do not go into the DROS queue. Depending on the network traffic or database maintenance issues, a DROS application can be auto-approved somewhere between 1 minute and 20 minutes. Sorry, 120 minutes. But probably auto-approvals occur within 60 minutes. There's no evidence of the average amount of time it takes to complete a non-auto-approved DROS application. If a background check is completed prior to 10 days, the firearm is not released. That's the issue right there. Why? Why is it not released? We're going to get into the cooling off period pretty soon, but I want to finish this right here. And we're in the fifth finding of fact and section of finding of fact, and I think we have a few more of these that are much shorter to go next time. So a lot of this is just really learning about how California government operates in terms of firearms and how this affects. This is important because how does it affect people and then are they harmed? Cal DOJ databases may not have the most up-to-date information. This is under information entry in the California DOJ databases because reporting agencies may fail to submit information. So basically saying a lot of this is not updated. Can blame that on the governments. Cooling off period. A cooling off period is a waiting is I'm on page 20, is a period of time that is intended to provide a person with the opportunity to gather their emotions so that they do not obtain a firearm in a state of anger and make impulsive decisions to commit acts of violence against themselves or others. No evidence has been submitted regarding current or historical California suicide statistics or time to crime statistics. One study examined 30 survivors of firearm suicide attempts. Ooh, man. Indicated that suicide can be a relatively impulsive act. More than half of the 30 survivors reported having suicidal thoughts for less than 24 hours. In order to limit the access of a suicidal individual to a handgun, one recent study recommends a waiting period combined with a permit requirement. St studies regarding suicide rates and waiting period loss conducted prior to 2005 are generally considered inconclusive. He's citing Eugene Volokh of the Volokh Conspiracy. Well, he's citing the UCLA Law Review, but Eugene Volokh, there was a classic, UCLA did a classic thing on firearms in 2009. I'd highly recommend you check it out if you're ever in the law library and you have 3 days to burn. One study examined the national homicide and suicide rates between 85 and 1997 in light of the enactment of the Brady Act. For victims aged 21 to 55, no statistically significant differences between treatment states and control states were found as to either homicide or suicide rates. However, a decrease in the suicide rates for individuals over 55 was observed. The decrease was at least partially offset by an increase in non-gun suicides, which makes it less clear that the waiting period reduced overall suicides for those over age 55. In other words, for victims 21 to 55 in the category that can purchase a handgun, there was no statistical significant difference between effect of a waiting period, either for homicide or suicide. For the strategy of decreasing suicide for those above 55, it's murky. One study performed in 1992 found that only 3% of suicides occur within 2 weeks of obtaining a firearm. One study examining suicide rates for the 238,292 individuals who purchased handguns in California in 1991. From 1991 to 1996, the waiting period in effect in California for handguns was 15 days. The study concluded that those who purchase a handgun have a substantially increased risk of firearm suicide, beginning with the first week of purchase and lasting for 6 years. Now that's for people who waited for 15 days. This is an interesting addition. So, of the 238,292 purchasers, 48 committed suicide within 2 weeks of obtaining the firearm after waiting 15 days. And 40 purchasers were murdered with the firearm within the first month of obtaining the handgun. So, in other words, the 10-day waiting period had no effect at all on stopping suicide. And no effect at all at stopping murder. So, in other words, if this cooling off period thing was to be the whole deal, but it was, if this was going to be running the show, then we would just ban firearms altogether because that's the only way you can even capture these very small numbers. And when you see 48 committed suicide and you say small numbers, emotionally, that doesn't fit right. That doesn't sound right because each of those 48 people were created in the image of God and are bearers of rights and inherent dignity and worth. So one suicide is tragic. 48 times infinite number of it's still infinitely tragic. The question becomes, what is a government penal code crafter to do? What is a bureaucrat or a preferably a legislator, because they stand for elections and are accountable to the people? What are they to do that does not impact the fundamental individual rights of self-defense of all of the other people that are impacted? I mean, you have 48, so almost a quarter million, and 48 of that, what's the percentage? Sounds harsh to ask that question, but there's an answer. What is the percentage? Acknowledge the pain, the tragedy, but what is the percentage? And the percentage, 48 divided by almost a quarter million people, it's a really small, tiny percentage. And 40 is even a smaller number. And you have to understand that when you're delaying someone access to a firearm, in 100% of the cases, if they're attacked, they cannot defend themselves with that firearm. So what about that? Now, we're on number seven, criminal investigation of straw purchasers. So that's going to get into how the 10-day waiting period was designed to combat fraud and whether that reason it justifies how it impacts non-fraud people that just want a firearm for self-defense, or for they don't even have to say why they want it, and as long as it's not criminal. There's a number of lawful uses for a firearm. Could be register. It could be recreation. Could be hunting. It could be you just like history, so you could maybe need it for self-defense, and that's a very serious reason to want it, and it's perfectly lawful, and it's perfectly moral. So what about that? And so you're going to see straw purchases like the cooling off. If you let the prohibition of and the prevention of straw purchases to run the whole show on the 10-day waiting period, then if you let that go to its logical conclusion, you would just ban all firearms. And so Ishii is trying to say, okay, but we need a clear understanding of what's relevant, what's not, to the 10-day waiting period for people that have a certificate of eligibility, a background check that's good for a year, who have a California concealed carry weapon license. They already have a weapon on them, licensed, lawful. And people that just already have a firearm. And if they're auto approved in 1 minute, why do they have to wait 10 days? I really like this judge because he's so patient. And he's like, he really wants to know the answer. I mean, he's talking to Kamala Harris. Ishii has no ambition for higher office. I mean, he's old. I mean, he's already a senior judge at this time. I mean, you know what a senior judge is, right? When a judge takes senior status, that just means they can take as much vacation as they want and they get the same pay. That's what that means. They're retired, but they still can come to work if they want. And so If he takes a case, he'll, I mean, he'll do it because of ethics and professional obligation. He won't just like not do it, go golfing. But so, I mean, if he takes a case, you know, it's because he wants to stay, you know, mentally a lot active. He doesn't get paid anymore. So taking senior status means that you can just skip the next one. But if they do, they do it that way because they don't want, there's so many cases, they need all the help they can get. So, and then the older guys want something to do. So just helps everybody. So he's already, you know, he's not like he's going for the Supreme Court. He's not writing this to try to get anywhere. But Kamala Harris is defending this because she wants higher office and she thinks it's going to help her get it. And turned out it did in her case. So that's something you want to think about. If this really is arbitrary and the defendant is getting political points for that, that's not a good dynamic for our constitutional republic. The only thing that can stop it is you by paying attention. Thank you for joining me on the Republican Professor podcast. Today is May 9th, 2024, and I'm coming to you from the state of California, Orange County. Take care. We'll see you next time.